We
are.
We
are.
We are Cultivate.
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 We are Cultivate.
Since our ancestors could use rocks and sticks to perpetrate the horrific act, murder has been an innate human fear. Due to the unpredictability of their demonic presence and the relentless carnage of their routines, serial killers are right to be feared. Even more so are serial child killers, such as a registered nurse by the name of Beverly Allitt. Her killing spree would occur over the course of 59 days in 1991. Her methods made these atrocities even more grisly. She preferred to inject large quantities of insulin or simply syringe-derived air bubbles into her underage victims. Allitt was given 13 life sentences in May 1993, and the Angel of Death remains behind bars to this day. These are the crimes of Beverly Allitt. Well, hello, everyone. It's Dom, and welcome to this week's episode of Horror House, True Crime, and the Macabre. I hope you've all had a fantastic week, and please take this as your reminder that you are one swell human being. And I'm so, so glad that you're here, and I'm so glad that you're taking the time to listen to this episode today, and you've taken time out of your schedule to listen to me tell a horrific story about a horrific woman. But honestly, it means the world that, you know, you're here and that you're taking the time to listen today. So last month, I know that we're in February, but I need to talk about this. Last month was a big month for the podcast, and it was an amazing start to the year for our humble little production. Why, you ask? Well, that's because we had over 800 downloads in January. I think 808 was the exact number. And that was by far the best month download-wise we've had since I launched the show in late 2021. Late 2021. Holy hell. There's been like 16 months or something since I launched the show. That's crazy. That's crazy. But yeah, it's insane. 800 downloads or over 800 downloads. It's insane. And we just want to thank everyone who's listened, who's rated the show, who's shared the show, who's recommended the show, engaged with the show on Instagram, you know, liking and commenting on posts, sharing posts, you know, all of that. And that includes new listeners as well that have, you know, maybe started listening in January or have recently found the show. Hello, welcome, bonjour. We are happy that you're here and we're happy that you're a Horror House hottie and We hope you stick around, but also to the shows and the people that have been supporting us, you know, from day one or from, you know, early on, your continued support, it means the world. Genuinely, it means the world. We love each and every one of you, and your support warms our cold, cold hearts. You're all fucking amazing, but let's push things even further, shall we? In February, why don't we go for 1,000 downloads in February? I think we can. So, you know, carry on supporting the show, but do it even more so we can have an even better month this month. That would bring me so much joy. So, how can you support the show financially? Well, we have our merch store. We have t-shirts, we have hoods, we have sweatshirts, we have stickers, lots and lots of stuff. With our logo on it. So if you want to represent the show, please head on over and have a look at the merch store. As a little sweetener to maybe sway you, it's free shipping everywhere, no matter what country you're in. So, you know, this is pretty cool. You can also donate to the show by using the Buy Me a Coffee link, which is in the Instagram bio. What is that, you ask? Well, with Buy Me a Coffee, simply put, you can donate to the show by buying us a coffee, or two coffees, or three coffees, or four coffees, however many coffees you desire. Obviously, it isn't actual coffee. It is a one-time monetary donation, no subscription or recurring payment. And it helps the show produce more content. And maybe it might even help the show go international. Maybe. So if you want to support us financially, those are a few ways that you can do that. So with the housekeeping out the way, let's get into this week's case of the killer nurse, Beverly Allitt. I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce it. Allitt? It's not Allitt, I don't think. I mean, either way, she's a grade A bitch, so I don't think it matters too much. But yes, this is the case of the killer nurse, Beverly. Not going to lie to you guys, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be fucking rough. So with that in mind, there are a few trigger warnings that I just wanted to make you guys aware of, such as references to self-harm, false rape allegations, false pregnancies, and a whole fucking lot of child murder. Obviously, child murder is harder to listen to than, I mean, normal murder is hard to listen to, but when it involves children that are like months old, it's rough. So if you want to sit this one out and you want to go and listen to one of the lighter episodes that we have, I'm not going to begrudge you. I'm not going to begrudge you at all. But if you are still here, I'm very happy that you've decided to stick around. Let's get cracking on this case of the Angel of Death. Beverly Gail Allitt was born on October the 4th, 1968, and spent her childhood in Corby Glen, which is a community close to Grantham in the UK. She had a brother and two sisters. Her mother was a school cleaner, while her father, Richard, worked at a local off license. Growing up as one of four children, Allitt had some concerning behaviours early on, such as covering wounds with bandages and casts to bring attention to herself without allowing the wounds to be investigated, you know, because there weren't any wounds to be investigated. She gained weight as a teen and grew more and more attention-seeking and frequently displayed anger towards other people. She spent a lot of time in hospitals getting treatment for various physical illnesses, which led to the removal of her perfectly healthy appendix. Note, I said perfectly healthy appendix. No need for that thing to be removed. She insisted on messing with the surgical scar so the wound would heal slowly. She was also known to self-harm, thus she had to resort to, quote, doctor hopping, where she would change to the next doctor as soon as the first one would become aware of her attention-seeking behaviours. So that's a handful of bullet points, but I think I've painted the picture, haven't I, of what kind of person this woman is, and can probably understand why what will happen later will happen. So Allitt would go on to train as a nurse, where she was accused of strange behavior, like spreading shit on the walls of the nursing home where she was receiving her training. Perfectly normal thing to do. I go around spreading shit on the walls all the time. That's perfectly normal, right? Good Lord. Her absentee level was also exceptionally high, which was the result of a string of, quote, illnesses. You'll understand why I said, quote, illnesses. Prior to the breakup of their relationship, her then boyfriend claimed that she was a vindictive, cunning, and deceptive woman, claiming false pregnancies and accusing him of rape. She was given a temporary 6-month contract at the chronically understaffed Grantham and Kesteven Hospital in Lincolnshire in 1991, despite her history of low attendance and repeated failures of her nursing examinations. Yes, this woman sounds like the ideal person to be a nurse. Let's get Beverly in. She started working in Children's Ward 4. When she first started, there were only two trained nurses working the day shift and only one for the night shift, which may have contributed to how long her violent attention-seeking behavior would go unchecked. So now we're going to get into the murdery portion, let's say, of the episode. And it's going to be rough. So just a word of warning. So Liam Taylor, a 7-month-old baby, was her first victim, and was taken to Ward 4 on February the 21st, 1991, with a chest infection. Alet went out of her way to convince his parents to return home and get some rest, assuring them that he was in excellent hands. Spoiler alert, he wasn't. When they arrived back, Alet informed them that Liam had experienced a respiratory emergency, but had since recovered. She offered to stay on shift later at night so she could keep an eye on the boy, and his parents decided to stay the night at the hospital as well. Just before midnight, Liam experienced yet another respiratory emergency, but it was believed that he had successfully overcome it. When Alet was left alone with the boy's condition would rapidly deteriorate. He became deathly pale and started to develop red patches on his face. At that time, Alet called for an emergency resuscitation team. Alet's nursing co-workers were perplexed by the absence of alarm monitors that should have sounded when he stopped breathing. Despite the best efforts of the medical staff, Liam would have a cardiac arrest, significant brain damage, and was only able to stay alive thanks to the use of life support systems. On medical advice, his parents had to make the agonizing decision to remove their baby from life support, and his cause of death was recorded as a heart failure. Timothy Hardwick, an 11-year-old boy with cerebral palsy, was moved to Ward 4 2 weeks later after having an epileptic fit. The emergency resuscitation team was called after Alet took over the boy's care and found him turning blue and without a pulse after a time when she was alone with him. The team, which included a pediatric specialist, tried everything to bring the boy back to life, but however, were unsuccessful. An autopsy later failed to provide an obvious cause of death, although Liam's epilepsy would be officially named as the cause. On March the 3rd, 1991, Kaylee Desmond, a one-year-old who had a chest infection, was moved to Ward 4. 5 days after appearing to be making a full recovery, Kaylee would suffer a heart attack. And guess who was caring for her at the time? That would be one Beverly Alet, of course. However, Kaylee was successfully revived and moved to a different hospital in the area. The first indications of criminal activity were found here under her armpit, where doctors found a puncture hole and an adjacent air bubble. Unfortunately, this was determined to be an unintentional injection, which would preserve, for now, Alet's secrecy. Paul Crampton, who was 5 years old, was admitted to Ward 4 on March the 20th, 1991, due to a minor bronchial infection. Just prior to his discharge, Alet, who was again attending a patient by herself, summoned help as Paul appeared to be suffering from insulin shock, going into a near coma on not one, not two, but three separate occasions. Each time, the physicians were able to revive him, but his high insulin levels would baffle them. Alet accompanied him when he was transported by ambulance to a different hospital in Nottingham, where it was discovered that he once more had too much insulin in his system. Baby Paul was incredibly lucky to have escaped the angel of death's care. The following day, 5-year-old Bradley Gibson, a pneumonia patient, experienced cardiac arrest but was revived by the I'm surprised that hasn't tripped me up already, I'm not going to lie. But was revived by the resuscitation team. His insulin levels were found to be high in further blood tests, which baffled the treating doctors. Later that evening, while Alet was visiting, Bradley would suffer yet another heart attack and was then taken to Nottingham, where he later recovered. Despite the fact that Alet's presence and presumed care were a constant element in all of these occurrences, nobody seemed to notice or give the horrifying possibilities any thought at all. And you would think at this point, people would really start to question all of these coincidences. I know I would. I'd be like, you know, this is becoming a pattern that every time this woman's alone with a patient, they go into shock. or they have a heart attack, or she has to call the resuscitation team, and it happens, and it's happened a lot. So surely, like, why are alarm bells not ringing? What's going on at this hospital? Maybe it's because they're so understaffed that things are just slipping through the cracks, and Beverly's just able to get away with it and not arouse any suspicion. I don't know. But on that note, I think now is a good time to take a quick break. So go and make a brew, have a smoke, scream for a bit, whatever it is you want to do, whatever it is you need to do. And I will see you right back here in just a little bit.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. The one hearing us right now. Welcome to Cryptic Zoo. I'm Thina.
And I'm Kylie. We wanted to say hey and tell you about our podcast. It's a podcast we both host where we talk crimes, cryptids, murders, and a lot of wild stuff in between.
You can find Mothman, Jeffrey Dahmer, SeaWorld, Spectrophilia, Casey Anthony, or even Skinwalker Ranch to be just a few of the crazy topics we cover.
We even do some fun urban legends to make you feel like a kid at the campfire again.
We're just two best friends hanging out, diving into all the things that your coworkers think you're a weirdo for wanting to talk about. We have a new episode every Tuesday at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're always open for case suggestions.
Our Instagram is @CrypticSoupPod, where our DMs are always open, so slide on in. We always want to hear your opinions about any cases and episodes we cover.
You can find our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and most podcasting platforms. At Cryptic Soup Pod, the menu is always overflowing with crazy topics you'll want to hear about. So join the conversation today and come hang out with us.
Stay tuned.
Hello, twisted humans. Do you find yourself wanting to know more about the latest murder, conspiracy, cults, or haunting?
Then this is the podcast for you. We're bringing the most intense stories that'll keep you up at night.
He was found guilty of voluntary manslaughter and felonious assault, but he was only sentenced to 5 months of probation.
And this would be the last time that anyone ever saw Fiona.
There are allegedly two women who also drowned in the first class pool.
Was this the same glowing green that they had seen in the darkness the night before?
He had refused to sit near the wagon cloth because of stains on it, which were most likely blood.
Join us every Tuesday for a glass of wine or sangria and a dose of true crime. I'm Alicia.
And I'm Sierra. And this is
Twisted and Uncorked.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's plod on, shall we? Yik Hung Chan, also known as Henry, a two-year-old child, turned blue on March 22, 1991, and showed severe signs of distress when Alit called for help, but he would later recover after receiving oxygen. He was transferred to the large hospital in, guess where, Nottingham, after yet another attack, where he would make a full recovery. His symptoms were attributed to a fractured skull, which was the result of a fall. Twins Katie and Becky Phillips, who were only 2 months old, had been kept in for surveillance due to their early delivery, and they would be the ones that would attract Alit's attention next. On April 1st, 1991, Becky was admitted to Ward 4 due to gastroenteritis. I think I nailed that. And Alit would take over her care. Beverly would raise the alarm 2 days later, saying Becky appeared to be hypoglycemic and cold to the touch. No illness was discovered. Baby Becky was then delivered to her mother to go home. During the night, Becky would have fits and yell out in what appeared to be pain, but the doctor who was called said she might have had colic. Her parents watched over her in their bed, but she would pass away in the middle of the night. The cause of death was unclear despite a examination, according to pathologists. As a precaution, Grantham admitted Katie, Becky's living twin. Alit was regrettably present once more, and soon after, surprise, surprise, she was calling for a resuscitation team. That word is, I'm struggling with that word today. Oh my God, a resuscitation team once more to save the life of baby Katie, who had stopped breathing. Although the girl's resuscitation was successful, she had the same situation 2 days later. She was moved to Nottingham, where it was found that she had severe brain damage and 5 broken ribs. Are not, like I said, are Nottingham not getting a little sus at this point? All of these patients coming from Grantham under the care of one specific person, surely they're like, we're having a lot of people from this hospital. What is happening at Grantham? What is going on? In an almost unfathomable twist of fate, Katie's mother asked Beverly Allett, the Angel of Death, to be Katie's godmother because she was so grateful to Allett for allegedly saving her daughter's life. Beverly would accept, even after causing partial paralysis, cerebral palsy, and sight and hearing damage. It seems like the perfect choice for a godmother, right? Who wouldn't want Beverly Allett as their godmother? Fucking hell. After 4 more victims, suspicions at the hospital were finally aroused due to the high frequency of unexplained attacks in otherwise healthy patients and Allett's presence during all of these events. On April the 22nd, 1991, Allett's violent spree was brought to an end with the death of 15-month-old Claire Peck, an asthmatic who required a breathing tube. The infant had a heart attack while in Allett's care for just a short time, but the resuscitation team was able to safely revive her. Once more, alone in Allett's care, baby Claire would suffer a second heart attack, and unfortunately from this, she could not be revived. Despite the fact that Claire's post-mortem revealed that she had passed away naturally, hospital consultant Dr. Nelson Porter opened an investigation. He was disturbed by the significant increase in cardiac arrests on Ward 4 during the preceding 2 months. When testing revealed elevated potassium levels in Claire's blood 18 days later, the police were contacted. Lignocaine, a drug meant to assist adults experiencing cardiac arrest, was discovered in the girl's system when her body was excavated. Stuart Clifton, the police superintendent assigned to the investigation, suspected foul play. When he looked into the other suspicious instances that had happened in the previous 2 months, he discovered that the majority of them had abnormally high amounts of insulin. He then learned that Allett had earlier reported that the insulin's refrigerator key was missing. Records checks found missing daily nurse logs that fit the time frame Paul Crampton had been in ward for, which prompted even more questions. When 25 separate suspicious episodes with 13 victims were identified, 4 of whom were dead, the common factor was the presence of one Beverly Allett at every single one. So the officer immediately identified Allett as his main suspect, and by July 1991, the police department was certain that it had sufficient reliable evidence to accuse her of murder. To prevent any irreparable investigation errors, they would wait, however, until November. When questioned, Allett displayed composure and restraint, denying any involvement in the attacks and adamantly stating that she had only been tending to the patients. Because of course she would deny. Of course this woman's not going to admit it. You heard what her, you know, what she was like in her early life. Parts of the missing nursing logs were found after a search of her home. Police conducted more in-depth background checks and discovered a pattern of behavior that suggested a very serious personality disorder. To the shock of absolutely nobody who had this on their bingo card, I think everyone did, I'm not going to lie, Allett displayed signs of the syndromes Munchausen and Munchausen's by proxy, which are characterized by a desire to attract attention through illnesses. Remember her very bad attendance because she was, quote, ill? That's why I was like, quote, ill. There you go. That's exactly why. Munchausen syndrome refers to the self-infliction or self-feigning of medical or psychological symptoms in order to attract attention. And Munchausen's via proxy is the act of harming someone else to draw attention to oneself. A person presenting with both of these illnesses is fairly unusual. Alet had behaviors that appeared to be indicative of Munchausen syndrome during her teens. And when these behaviors did not result in the required reactions from other people, she would start harming her young patients in an effort to satisfy her need to be noticed. Even after repeated visits and evaluations by psychologists while already incarcerated, Alet would still resist in saying what she had done. And she would eventually be accused of 4 counts of murder, 11 counts of attempted murder, and 11 counts of grievous bodily harm, or GBH. Alet lost a tremendous amount of weight while awaiting trial. Her anorexia saw her shed 70 pounds. These illnesses would cause a delay in her trial, which was eventually held at Nottingham Crown Court on the 15th of February, 1993. The presence of the defendant at each suspicious episode, as well as the absence of incidents after her removal from the ward, were both shown to the jury by the prosecution. Additionally, Alet was connected to the victim's elevated potassium and insulin levels, puncture wounds, and evidence of drug injection. She was also accused of smothering or interfering with machinery in order to deprive her victims of oxygen. The trial also covered her early years, with pediatrics expert Professor Roy Meadow testifying about Munchausen's illness, and discussing how Alet clearly displayed characteristics of Munchausen by proxy syndrome. He also cited her actions following her incarceration, the number of ailments that plagued her life, and the consequent delay in the trial as supporting evidence for this conclusion. Professor Meadows acknowledged that he thought Alet's ailment would never be remedied and would state that she had to be removed from society to protect others because it had simply flourished and established itself for too long. The trial would last for 2 months, and Alet would attend for 16 days because she was sick, apparently. Yeah, not sure I agree with that one, Chief. Not sure if I believe that one. I do definitely believe, however, that she had to be removed from society to protect others. Absolutely, she is a danger to society. She does not need to be on the streets. She does not need to be in any hospital. In any capacity. Like, no, this woman just needs to be behind bars. Alet was found guilty of murder and attempted murder on May the 20th, 1993, and was sentenced to 13 life sentences. Boom. Get fucked, Beverly Alet, you absolute fuckhead. I was so close to dropping the C-bomb then, but my mum would probably disown me, so... She is a big C word, mum. It was the heaviest sentence ever given to a female, but Mr. Justice Latham believed it was appropriate given the horrifying suffering of the victims, their families, and the disgrace she had brought upon the nursing profession. In fact, Grantham and Kesteven Hospital suffered such a severe impact that the maternity unit was permanently shut down altogether. As for Alet herself, the murderer was sent to Rampton Secure Hospital rather than a traditional prison. This high-security prison was among those designated by the Mental Health Act of the United Kingdom for criminals such as Alet. Soon enough, she was back to her attention-seeking ways. However, on one occasion, Alet would swallow glass, and on another, she would pour boiling water on her hands. This woman, man. This woman. Honestly. Good God, what a fucking cretin. Stain on fucking society. 3 of the killings and 6 of the attacks were eventually confessed to by Alet after that. Due to the obvious seriousness of her crime, the UK Home Office formally designated Alet as one of the select few criminals who would never be eligible for parole. So Rampton Secure Hospital has been compared to a holiday camp run by Butlins, according to some, most notably Chris Taylor, the father of baby Liam, Alec's first victim. The facility, which has some 1,400 staff to deal with the around 400 inmates, cost taxpayers £2,000 per week per inmate to administer. And just to finish off with a rather infuriating fact, it infuriated me, that's for sure. Since her imprisonment in 1993, Alice has reportedly collected over £25,000 in state benefits, according to a May 2005 article in The Mirror. In 2006, Alice applied for a review. Probation service subsequently contacted the families of her victims. However, as of yet, Beverly Alice is still where she belongs, behind bars. And let's hope she never, ever, ever gets out. She should die in prison, or she should just be given the electric chair. Quite frankly, I think even like lethal injection is too kind. Maybe just hang her. Maybe that's a bit controversial. I don't know. But if you kill kids, in my opinion, you don't deserve any sort of kindness in any way, shape, or form. That is just my opinion. but that is the case of Beverly Alice, the angel of death. Certainly no angel. Certainly no angel. I just don't understand how people can do the things that this woman did against anyone. Doesn't matter if you're an adult or a child, but especially a child. You know, 5 months old, they're defenseless. They can't do anything about it. You know, it's just the disregard for human life is just mind boggling. But yeah, that was Beverly Alice. What a woman. What a woman. You know, definitely the nurse that you really want to be looking after your kids. That's for sure. But yes, I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. It was another heavy one. I hope that I made it somewhat palatable for you, and I hope you enjoyed. So if you do enjoy what we do here at Horror House, please leave a rating and a review. You can rate on Spotify, you can rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also rate and review on the website as well. Don't forget to follow the show wherever you listen to your podcasts, and also on Instagram at horrorhouse_pod. And if you have any suggestions for cases, please don't hesitate to slide into our DMs, pop up a message on the website. If you've got an idea for a case that you really want us to do, please just hit us up, and we will definitely do it. Also, if you want to support the show financially, please don't forget to have a look at the Buy Me a Coffee link. And also, if you do want to get some merch and represent the show, then please have a look at the merch store. Have a look and take advantage of that free shipping. You know, and likewise, tell us what you want on the merch store. If there's something on there that you really want on the store, if there's something that isn't on the store that you really want on the store, should I say, please just let us know, and we will try and get some more merch on there. Yeah, as I said, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed. And all that's left from me is, as always, stay spooky.